Good morning, podcast audience. Let's get started. You're listening to the Ken Hodge Postal Podcast. The opening track is a tune compliments of the Postal Jamming Guys, Dave Brantley and Tony Berkheimer. I'm not messing with that. Hang in here with me for about 2 minutes and just listen to the orchestrated magic performed by the Postal Jamming Guys. Bad man. That's all I can say. You a bad, bad man. Tony Berkheimer, you's a bad man also. Never mind being grammatically correct. You's a bad man. Hey, listen, folks. This is Ken Hodge, and let's get ready for the podcast. It takes me to a different place when I hear the Postal Jamming Guys do what they do. And I'm not a band type person. I'm more of a DJ. I grew up in the DJ era, but something about this group. Anyway, good morning, and let's talk about the post office. And today we're going to talk about the post office in reference to two subject matters. The first subject matter will lend itself to postal workers' compensation. The second reference will lend itself to Article 546 in the Elm.
Ken.
And Article 546 in the Elm, being the Employee Labor Relations Manual, deals specifically with reassignment or reemployment of employees injured on duty. Stand by, we have an interesting show, and I'm just going to allow the Postal Jamming Guys, Maggot Brain, to play in the background while we have a conversation. Let's start our conversation off with understanding that the $1.9 trillion relief bill, it did more than just give postal or federal workers 600 hours, 15 weeks of paid time off. It also it secured a critical workers' compensation reform. And that reform, I'm going to spend a few minutes right now and introduce it to you. And I'm going to start that introduction with a question. How many people knew or how many people were aware that you could have possibly filed or can file a CA1 or a CA2 in response to contracting COVID-19 in the workplace? And let me tell you something. I'm going to read this to you real short, coming right from the American Postal Workers Union website. Workers' compensation improves the process for COVID-19 related worker compensation claims. Workers who contract COVID-19 will be assumed to have contracted the illness on the job, streamlining the workers' compensation claim process. So on the surface, you may skim past that, but let me tell you something. If you contract COVID, the coronavirus, and you're at work, now let me tell you a couple of things that come into play here now. One of the things would be you can now say, or again, you're going to have to prove it, or be, they're saying they're reasonably sure. If you work at a government facility, let's just hypothetically say your job does a lousy job at contact tracing. Again, I'm speaking hypothetically because we know we work for the post office, and hey, they do a jolly great job on that contact tracing. But hypothetically, if your job does a lousy process on contact tracing, you as a federal employee, and right now I'm talking specifically to postal workers, can file a CA-1 for having contracted this disease at work, quarantine while being paid. So what we just did was we allowed, when I say we, the system, I'm sorry, the system has just put in place that even if you have used emergency sick leave, if you're all out of options, before you tap into the emergency federal employees leave, that I like to call it 086-21, and I say it like that because that code is going to tamper with your retirement and thrift savings. So we want to stay away from that code, but we still want to protect ourselves. Listen to me carefully. If you don't have the leave and you are and you contract COVID-19 at work, did you hear what I say? You contracted it at work. You can file a CA-1, and let me tell you what the Department of Labor is thinking. They improve the COVID-19 related workers' compensation claims. Workers who contracted COVID-19 will be assumed to have contracted the illness on the job, streamlining the workers' compensation process. So if at the very least, and I also instruct in injury compensation also, so this is not pie in the sky. If at the very least, if you're contacted by an employee at work, a friend, and you feel as though you are coming down with some of the symptoms, or you're experiencing some of the COVID-19 related symptoms, then I would advise you to immediately file a CA-1. And it, when you file that CA, it's going to be a CA-1 or a CA-2, but when you file that CA-1 and you immediately leave work for 14 days because you're going to be quarantined, you're not going to have your pay interrupted. Do you hear what I'm saying to you? Management does not have the legal authority not to pay you on that CA-1. You see, because when you, unless you check the box, you don't want continuation of pay. But as long as you check that box, and again, we're not teaching a scam because this is a public podcast and I would not put scams out. What I'm saying to you is if your job does a lousy job at contact tracing, here is another avenue that you can use in order to ensure your income stream isn't disrupted. And that is, you can file a CA-1 or a CA-2. Well, excuse me, let's stick with the CA-1 and quarantine because you've been instructed or directed by medical personnel to do so, and you're going to not miss a paycheck. Now, let me say this, and I want to say this real clear.
Listen very closely.
When I say to you that when you file that CA-1, they have to pay you, they're going to pay you, but I would be remiss in my duties as a podcaster if I didn't tell you that if for some reason that CA1 is denied, then they're going to come to recoup those funds pretty much through your annual leave or some type of leave. Does that make sense to you? Again, you got to understand that the Department of Labor, Workers' Comp, they've streamlined a process to expedite COVID-related claims. So, and part of that process is workers who contracted COVID-19 will be assumed to have contracted the illness on the job. And again, we're not trying to rip anyone off. What we're doing is protecting ourselves now and being assured we're going to get paid while we do that. Because when they took away all leave and, you know, you had to use your own leave if you had it, or if not, you had to make a decision. I got to pay this mortgage. Do I stay home and be safe? Or, you know, I'm really not feeling too bad today. Do I go in and try to make this mortgage payment? And most times, I'm sorry, I'm going in to try to make this mortgage payment. Mortgage payment is probably the choice that was chosen. But now you don't have to do that. Again, if you contracted it, you can go with a CA1, not have your pay interrupted, as long as the Department of Labor accepts your claim. And if you have medical documentation with a positive COVID test on it, I cannot imagine why they would not accept your claim. So that's our first talking point. It's a very important talking point, and I need a lot of us, or more of us, to start talking on this point. The next topic for today is going to be coming out of the Employee Labor Relations Manual, Section 546. It deals with reassignment or reemployment of employees injured on duty. And let me start by saying, just so we're crystal clear, if you did not get hurt at work, none of what I'm about to say applies to you. Don't try to fit that square peg into the round hole. If you did not get injured at work, you are what is considered light duty. If you got injured at work, you are what is considered limited duty. Understand that. So today we're talking about the personnel who was injured at work. And in the ELM Section 546, it talks about the obligation. And the obligation the post office has is when an employee has partially overcome the injury or disability, the Postal Service has the following obligation. And I want to say that word again, obligation. Not maybe, not well, we'll get around to it, but you're obligated to do what I'm about to read. And for current employees, when an employee has partially overcome a compensatable disability, the Postal Service must make every effort towards assigning the employee to limited duty consistent with the employee's medically defined work limitations tolerance. In assigning such limited duty, the Postal Service should minimize any adverse or disruptive impact on the employee. The following considerations must be made in affecting such limited duty assignments. Before I go into some of the considerations, I gotta say this part one more time. The Postal Service should minimize any adverse or disruptive impact on the employee. So again, I always say on my podcast, Postal Headquarters, they put out guidance and direction to make the Postal Service, the post office, whatever you want to call it, a career that you can last 20 plus years in. Now, the way it's being administered is not what the writing says should happen. So how many people that hear this podcast are aware of any office where you know someone got hurt And the first thing management want to do is change your tour. Now, I'm not talking about outside of work injuries. You got hurt at work. Doesn't matter under suspicious issues. Doesn't matter. You filed a claim and it was accepted by OWCP. You have what is considered an at-work injury. Therefore, you are classified as limited duty. These are the people I'm talking to. The first thing the post office wants to do to you is, I want to change your tour. Even in light of the Elm saying that's the last thing postal management should do, that's the first thing in a lot of cases you'll see them gravitate to. So initially, they send the message to that injured employee that the post office don't think highly of you. They don't think highly of you. And what I'm going to do is, rather than go by the guidelines set forth in postal rules and regulations, I'm going to make it rough for you because I think that maybe you're not as hurt as you think or you want me to think. And so we start all these games. But I want you to know, folks, if you go back into postal manuals, and in this case, the Elm, well, in most cases, you don't have to because I'm going to. But if you go look in these manuals, you'll see what is supposed to happen. And I'm telling you, I can't make this percentage wide enough. More than three quarters of the time, it don't happen. And it don't happen because Postal Service managers don't read. So for them to think, and when I say don't read, I mean don't read postal rules and regulations. I'm not, you know, they're very learned people. I'm saying they don't read postal rules and regulations. So because they don't know, and again, because I don't know, I have to go what somebody said, that somebody told them that, hey, well, that seems to work. Doesn't mean that's the way it should work. So again, if you are hurt at work, the post office has an obligation to do things for you. The post office should do everything they can to make it comfortable for you while you go through the process of coming back to full duty. Now, the first paragraph, after I read the obligation, when I talked about who we're going to be addressing, to the extent there is adequate work available within the employee's work limitation tolerance, within the employee's craft, in the work facility in which the employee is regularly assigned, and during the hours when the employee regularly works, that work constitutes the limited duty to which the employee is assigned. So again, understanding the obligation the post office has to reassignment or reemployment of their injured employees, this is what they should do initially. For current employees, to the extent there is adequate work. Now see, this is where a lot of the gameplay come in. A lot of gameplay come in now, because in order to validate postal managers trying to make your life uncomfortable to force you back to work, see, they have to now say work isn't available. But I say to union members, again, yes, I'm going to ask you to do something. When you are aware that you have union members, APWU and mail handlers, when you are aware that you have personnel requesting limited duty and you see limited duty work in your areas, maybe communicate that to the branch presidents, because it's so easy for the post office to just say, well, we don't have work. Well, come on, let's be for real. You'll keep your old 30 is always backed up in a fictitious post office, and I'm just picking random facilities in random sections. Well, your old 30 is always backed up. You got this thing that you like to do now, and that is run uncanceled mail through a delivery barcode so they miss all that revenue protection. Maybe some of your limited duty people can face that mail for you. I don't know, but I'm simply saying, if the post office got serious or became serious about their obligation to reassignment or reemployment of their injured, they could reap a benefit out of it. So I'm not going to talk your ear off any more than I have this morning. But I want to let you know, there are rules and regulations that govern everything in the post office. And most of them, postal management just don't follow. I'm sorry. Yes, I said it. And we can continue to do this day in and day out, and we'll match it up to postal rules and regulations. And you'll understand, I'm not talking mean. I am what they call facking with you. I'm facking. I'm giving you facts, man. So we have to become students of the game. And luckily, there, I'm always going to stay on top of this as long as I'm in the vicinity. And I say, and I do this because I just like to do it. Just imagine if this was my full-time job. Hey, let's have a wonderful day, and we'll talk later in the week.